Welcome to The Deep Dive, a deeper look at sermons from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church.
Great to be digging in again.
Yeah, today we're unpacking two really powerful messages. The first is counterfeit Christianity, the principle of separation, and the second, the apostles, Simon Peter's journey of faith.
It's a fascinating pairing, isn't it? Foundational principles and then a very, very human story.
Exactly. Our mission, as always, is to pull out those key nuggets of knowledge, those insights, and give you some practical takeaways.
And just a reminder, the Bible references you'll hear are from the King James Version.
Right. And you can find these sermons, plus a whole lot more, from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church online. They're on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
All the main places. Just go to their website, faithwayfbc.com, for the info.
Perfect. Okay, so let's start with that first one. The call to authenticity, the principle of separation. Pastor Tim Travis makes this point early on that, well, the world is just full of counterfeits.
It really is. And he says something quite profound. Every truth has a counterfeit.
Yeah, but also kind of the flip side, that within every counterfeit, if you look hard enough, there's usually a kernel of truth hidden somewhere inside.
Which really highlights why knowing the real thing, the authentic truth, is so critical, especially when we're talking spirituality.
Yeah.
You've got to know the genuine article to spot the fake.
Right. You know? Absolutely. And this ties straight into a core command from 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, come out from among them and be separate, saith the Lord.
And the sermon really stresses this isn't just, you know, a helpful hint.
Not at all. It's presented as a command. Like the Ten Commandments aren't the Ten Suggestions.
Exactly. And sometimes that word separate can sound a bit harsh, maybe restrictive.
It can, yeah.
But the perspective offered is that these rules, these boundaries from God, they aren't meant to be punitive. They're actually expressions of his love, his protection.
That's a really key insight, like a parent setting rules for a kid. It's not out of spite. It's to keep them safe, help them flourish.
Right. Or that phrase, tall fences make good neighbors. Sometimes boundaries are just necessary for healthy relationships and, well, for safety.
And we see this pattern, this principle of separation, played out in the Bible quite a bit. Abraham is a prime example.
Oh, definitely. He was called to separate from his family's idolatry first.
Right. And then later, separating from worldly riches. Remember that whole situation with the king of Sodom?
Genesis 14. And even separating when it came to finding a wife for Isaac, seeking someone from his own people, not for the Canaanites.
Mm-hmm.
It was about maintaining that distinct identity.
That unequally yoked analogy is so vivid, too, thinking about two oxen.
Yeah, imagine them trying to plow together. If one isn't pulling its weight, or worse, pulling in a completely different direction.
Everything gets messed up. You can't move forward effectively.
And spiritually, this sermon suggests it's similar. There can't be real, true fellowship between righteousness and unrighteousness, or, you know, communion between light and darkness. They're fundamentally incompatible.
So that feeling some people get, that awkwardness or discomfort in certain worldly settings.
Yeah.
The sermon kind of reframes that. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It might actually be a sign of your distinctiveness. Light naturally makes darkness uncomfortable, right?
No.
It causes it to flee.
That's a powerful way to think about it. Discomfort as a sign of being distinct, not deficient.
But there's also a warning attached, isn't there? A danger in failing to separate. The sermon talks about apostasy, a falling away, particularly in the local church in the end times.
Yes, a sort of blending in where the church becomes worldly, adopting doctrines not found in Scripture, is presented as a significant warning sign.
And this brings up the crucial role of doctrine.
Absolutely critical.
Yeah.
The sermon argues that sound doctrine is the bedrock. It's the basis for genuine fellowship, for unity, even for correction within the church.
It's not just about lifestyle choices or the songs we sing, although those matter. The core beliefs, the doctrine, that's what our forefathers, as the sermon puts it, bled and died for.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a caution there about, well, what the sermon calls twisted Bibles and false doctrines, things that subtly undermine core truths.
Like denying the deity of Jesus. Or suggesting he and Satan were brothers, which some groups do.
Exactly. Or even small changes in translation, like changing the God to a God, which can completely alter the meaning. The point is, knowing the true doctrine is your defense against the counterfeit.
So applying this principle of separation isn't just about church doctrine. It's personal, too. It protects us from what the sermon calls a backsliding heart.
Right, like Lot. It wasn't an overnight thing. He saw the well-watered plains near Sodom, pitched his tent towards Sodom, and slowly, step by step, got drawn in until he was part of its leadership.
That image of backsliding, the Hebrew word meaning to sort of slide backward when you stop moving forward, like an ox stuck on a muddy hill.
It's very descriptive. It happens when momentum is lost.
And separation also protects us from, well, the chastening hand of God, which, again, isn't presented as anger, but as loving discipline. Like a parent correcting a child heading towards danger. Think of Samson, incredibly gifted, strong, but his downfall came through compromise, especially with worldly women.
And Solomon, too, the wisest man yet.
His great discrepancy, as 1 Kings calls it, loving many foreign women, building altars for their gods. It turned his heart away, a huge warning about compromise.
So what's the positive outcome, then, if we maintain this separation, this distinctiveness?
Well, the sermon suggests that's how we actually reveal God to unbelievers. Our different way of life becomes a testimony.
Like Rahab in Jericho. 40 years after the Red Sea crossing, she knew about the Israelites' God and his power. Their distinct history, their separation, it had traveled.
Exactly. Our lives speak volumes.
Yeah.
We're called to be light of the world, salt of the earth.
And salt, if it gets mixed with impurities, it loses its saltiness, right? It loses its preserving power, its distinct flavor.
Mm-hmm. Our testimony loses its impact if we just blend in completely. We don't make anyone thirsty for the living water if we taste just like everything else.
That's a strong image. So that's the principle of separation.
Yeah.
This call to authenticity. But how did this play out in a real human life with all its messiness?
Ah, well, that brings us perfectly to the second sermon, the apostles, Simon Peter's journey of faith.
Right. We have these apostles handpicked by Jesus, his special delegates, ambassadors, the very foundation of the church, as Ephesians says.
Foundational, yes. But, and this is so important, that they were ordinary men.
Totally ordinary, with ordinary flaws, weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
Just like us. James even says Elijah was a man with passions just like ours.
And the Bible is so honest about it, it doesn't gloss over their mistakes, their failures. Peter's story is maybe the prime example of that.
Which is actually really encouraging, isn't it? God choosing the, quote, foolish things, the weak things, so that no one can boast. It's all about his power, not human perfection.
Precisely. So Simon Peter, probably the most famous of the 12, always listed first in the Gospels, clearly a leader, very outspoken.
Originally Simon, but Jesus gives him the name Peter, meaning a rock or maybe a small stone.
Yeah, and the sermon clarifies that point about, upon this rock I will build my church. Jesus wasn't pointing to Peter as the foundation, like a first pope.
No, he was pointing to the truth Peter had just confessed. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. That truth, and Christ himself is the chief cornerstone, that's the rock.
A really important distinction. So Peter was a fisherman from Bethsaida, then Capernaum, worked with his brother Andrew and James and John.
And the sermon points out something interesting based on Luke chapter 4.
Ah, yes. The detail about Jesus healing Peter's wife's mother.
Right, which clearly shows Peter was married. It counters the tradition of celibacy being required for that kind of leadership role, at least biblically speaking.
It's just a straightforward fact in the text. And it was actually his brother Andrew who first brought Peter to Jesus.
Andrew, the soul winner. It's amazing how a simple invitation, come and see, can change everything.
Monumental impact from a quiet action. Mm-hmm. And Peter's call to full-time service. It came while he was busy working, fishing.
Mm-hmm. And his response was immediate. Straightway left their nets and followed him.
God often calls us right in the middle of our routines, doesn't he? Asking us to shift our focus.
And Peter didn't exactly have the usual credentials. Acts describes him and John as unlearned and ignorant men.
From a formal rabbinical training perspective, yeah.
But the source of their boldness. The scripture says people recognized they had been with Jesus.
That was the qualification,
yeah.
Being with him.
He was also part of that inner circle, Peter, James, and John. Mm. Present at really key moments, like the transfiguration. Saw things others didn't.
And he received that incredible revelation, thou art the Christ. Not from human reasoning, but from God.
A divine download, essentially. And he was given the keys of the kingdom of heaven.
Which the sermon explains wasn't about personal authority to let people into heaven or keep them out.
No, it was about unlocking the door of faith through preaching the gospel to different groups. First, the Jews at Pentecost.
And the Samaritans in Acts 8. And finally, the Gentiles. Through Cornelius in Acts 10, he opened the door, proclaimed the message that grants access.
So he had these incredible moments of faith and insight, but then there's the other side, his reckless courage.
Haha, yeah. Impulsive is definitely a word for Peter. Stepping out of the boat onto the water, amazing faith, but then doubt crept in.
Rebuking Jesus about his impending death, that earned him a sharp, "Get thee behind me, Satan," meaning adversary. He was opposing God's plan, even with good intentions.
And who could forget him slicing off the high priest's servant's ear in the garden, trying to defend Jesus, but completely misunderstanding the moment and acting in the flesh.
His heart was often right, but his execution, sometimes way off.
Which leads into that intense moment Jesus predicted the sifting. "Simon, Simon, behold, Satan hath desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat."
A scary thought. Sifting separates the wheat from the chaff, exposes weakness.
And it did, tragically. Peter, who boasted he'd never deny Jesus, ended up denying him three times, even with curses, a complete collapse under pressure.
It's one of the most heartbreaking moments in the Gospels.
It really is. But here's the hope. Jesus said he prayed for Peter, specifically that his faith wouldn't ultimately fail. And he said, "When thou art converted, when you're restored, strengthen thy brethren."
He knew Peter would stumble, but he also knew restoration was possible. And he planned to use that restored Peter.
Which is incredible news for all of us who fail, isn't it? Failure doesn't have to be the end of the story.
Definitely not. And that restoration scene after the resurrection by the Sea of Galilee, it's beautiful.
So beautiful. Jesus asking him three times, "Simon, son of Jonas, lovest thou me?"
One question for each denial. Giving Peter the chance to affirm his love and receive his commission anew. Feed my lambs, feed my sheep.
Total restoration. And Peter was powerfully changed after Pentecost. He became that rock, that pillar, strengthening everyone through his preaching, his leadership, his letters, 1st and 2nd Peter.
And his end. Tradition, like in Fox's Book of Martyrs, tells us he was crucified in Rome.
Yes, and that he requested to be crucified upside down, feeling unworthy to die in the same way as Jesus.
Wow. From impulsive fisherman to denier to restored apostle to martyr. What a journey.
It really shows that God uses all kinds of personalities, the loud ones, the impulsive ones, the flawed ones when they surrender to him. Peter's type A personality wasn't erased. It was redeemed and redirected.
So this whole deep dive, starting with the call to be separate, authentic, distinct, and then looking at Peter's incredibly human, stumble-filled, yet ultimately powerful journey.
It paints a picture, doesn't it? The high calling and the grace available when we inevitably fall short in our humanness.
So thinking about all this, what does it mean for you listening right now? How can you maybe live more authentically, rooted in truth, better able to spot those counterfeits?
And how can you view God's commands, maybe even the tough ones about separation, as his loving protection for you?
And Peter's story, his impulsiveness, his big failures, that amazing restoration, how can that encourage you in your own walk, knowing God uses flawed people for incredible things?
Yeah, definitely something to think about. And maybe here's a final provocative thought to chew on.
Okay.
In a world that's always pushing us to blend in, to conform, what does genuine, maybe even courageous separation actually look like in your day-to-day choices, your work, your relationships, your entertainment? And how might living that distinct life actually be the most powerful way to reveal God to the people around you?
That's a great question to reflect on. How does distinctiveness become a witness? Well, we really encourage you to check out the full sermons if this has sparked your interest. Again, Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church posts them on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, Apple Podcasts.
All the info is at faithwayfbc.com.
We hope this deep dive has given you some valuable things to think about, maybe some new perspectives for your own journey.